This was greeted with disdainful laughter, but he pressed on. "You'd just have to wear a diver's helmet, that's all, and nail all the windows shut and fill the houses with air. It would be great." Adam greeted this with the chilly stare he reserved for any of them who came up with an idea he really wished he'd thought of first. "They could have done," he conceded somewhat weakly. "After they'd sent all the teachers off in the boats, maybe everyone else stayed on when it went down." "You wouldn't have to wash," said Brian, whose parents forced him to wash a great deal more than he thought could possibly be healthy. Not that it did any good. There was something basically ground in about Brian, because everything would stay clean, and you could grow seaweed and stuff in the garden and shoot sharks and have pet octopuses and stuff, and there wouldn't be any schools and stuff because they'd have got rid of all the teachers. "They could still be down there now," said Pepper. They thought about the Atlanteans, clad in flowing mystic robes and goldfish bowls, enjoying themselves deep under the choppy waters of the ocean. "Huh," said Pepper, summing up their feelings. "What should we do now?" said Brian. "It's brightened up a bit." In the end, they played Charles Fort Discovering Things. This consisted of one of them walking around with the ancient remains of an umbrella, while the others treated him to a rain of frogs, or rather, frog. They could only find one in the pond. It was an elderly frog who knew the them of old and tolerated their interest as the price it paid for a pond otherwise free of moorhens and pike. It put up with things good-naturedly for a while before hopping off to a secret and so far undiscovered hideout in an old drainpipe. Then they went home for lunch. Adam felt very pleased about the morning's work. He'd always known that the world was an interesting place, and his imagination had peopled it with pirates and bandits and spies and astronauts and similar. But he'd also had a nagging suspicion that, when you seriously got right down to it, they were all just things in books and didn't properly exist anymore. Whereas this aquarium age stuff was really real. Grown-up people wrote lots of books about it. New Aquarian was full of adverts for them. And Bigfoots and Mothmen and Yetis and Sea Monsters and Surrey Pumas really existed. If Cortez, on his peak in Darien, had had slightly damp feet from efforts at catching frogs, he'd have felt just like Adam at that moment. The world was bright and strange, and he was in the middle of it. He bolted his lunch and retired to his room. There were still quite a few new Aquarians he hadn't read yet. The cocoa was a congealed brown sludge half filling the cup. Certain people had spent hundreds of years trying to make sense of the prophecies of Agnes Nutter. They had been very intelligent, in the main. Anathema Device, who was about as close to being Agnes as genetic drift would allow, was the best of the bunch. But none of them had been angels. Many people, meeting Aziraphale for the first time, formed three impressions. That he was English, that he was intelligent, and that he was gayer than a tree full of monkeys on nitrous oxide. Two of these were wrong. Heaven is not in England, whatever certain poets may have thought, and angels are sexless, unless they really want to make an effort. But he was intelligent. And it was an angelic intelligence, which, while not being particularly higher than human intelligence, is much broader and has the advantage of having thousands of years of practice. Aziraphale was the first angel ever to own a computer. It was a cheap, slow, plasticky one, much touted as ideal for the small businessman. Aziraphale used it religiously for doing his accounts, which were so scrupulously accurate that the tax authorities had inspected him 5 times in the deep belief that he was getting away with murder somewhere. But these other calculations were of a kind no computer could ever do. Sometimes he would scribble something on a sheet of paper by his side. It was covered in symbols which only 8 other people in the world would have been able to comprehend. 2 of them had won Nobel Prizes, and 1 of the other 5 dribbled a lot and wasn't allowed anything sharp because of what he might do with it. Anathema lunched on miso soup and pored over her maps. There was no doubt the area around Tadfield was rich in ley lines. Even the famous Reverend Watkins had identified some. But unless she was totally wrong, they were beginning to shift position. She'd spent the week taking soundings with theodolite and pendulum, and the Ordnance Survey map of Tadfield area was now covered with little dots and arrows. She stared at them for some time. Then she picked up a felt-tip pen, and with occasional references to her notebook, began to join them up. The radio was on. She wasn't really listening, so quite a lot of the main news item passed right by her unheeding ears, and it wasn't until a couple of keywords filtered down into her consciousness that she began to take notice. Someone called a spokesman